I'd like to call this meeting to order. Requirements of the Open Public Meeting Law, 1975, Chapter 231, have been satisfied and that adequate notice of this meeting has been published in the Star Gazette and posted on the bulletin board of Borough Hall stating the time, place, and purpose of the meeting as required by law. Would you all please rise and join me in saluting our flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
May I have a roll call, please?
Rule.
Here.
Torres.
Here.
McDonald.
Here.
Leva.
Here.
Valentine.
Here.
Higgins.
Here.
Boyle.
Here. First up on our list, we have a proclamation for a Charles Wright of the Fire Department. Mr. Wright, if you would come forward, please. And Mr. Higgins, Mr. Jewell, please be so kind as to join me. We have many dapper-looking gentlemen here tonight in honor of you. Okay, and this is a proclamation of the Borough of Washington expressing appreciation to Charles F. Wright for his service to the Washington Borough Fire Department. Whereas Charles F. Wright has honorably served the Borough of Washington in the capacity as a dedicated member of the Washington Borough Fire Department for the past 55 years, and whereas Charles F. Wright joined the Washington Borough Fire Department in January 1956, whereas Charles F. Wright served as chief of the department from January 1980 to December 1981, and whereas Charles F. Wright has been active with fire training and as an instructor at the national, state, and county levels, and whereas the Borough of Washington has benefited greatly from his guidance in all matters affecting the operations of the Washington Borough Fire Department during his long tenure, and whereas Charles F. Wright has devoted himself to the betterment of the Borough of Washington, and whereas the elected representatives of the Borough of Washington, the mayor and council desire to formally express the heartfelt appreciation of the entire community to Charles F. Wright for his many years of outstanding and dedicated service to the Borough of Washington. Now therefore be it resolved by the mayor and council of the Borough of Washington and the County of Warren, State of New Jersey, that the appreciation of the community is hereby expressed to Charles F. Wright for his 55 years of dedicated and honorable service to the citizens of Washington Borough, and our sincerest best wishes are expressed to him and his family now and in the future. Be it further resolved that the borough clerk be directed to have this proclamation duly embossed and framed for presentation by the mayor of the Borough of Washington on February 15, 2011, and to have a certified copy of this proclamation recorded in the permanent record of the Borough of Washington in perpetuity. Signed by me.
Thank you.
Gee, I was hoping that you'd give me a little shot. I hate to talk with my back to people. That bothers me.
I don't need the microphone. Anyway, some of you, sit down, guys, relax. Some of you on council know me, some of you don't know me. Anyway, to start out, a little history. My great-grandfather, my grandfather, my father, and myself all have the distinct privilege of being born and raised in Washington. I just sold last year and moved out of town, and that's one of the things that bothered me more than anything else. I had to resign from active duty in the fire department because I moved out of the borough. But anyway, that's progress, I guess, something like that. My dad was the only paid fireman in the borough of Washington, in the old firehouse over across the street here, at the corner. In 1931, they put in an alarm system that was way ahead of its time, if you will. And he went on duty there. He was on, they didn't call him dispatchers then, but he was on duty nights. And he went to work four in the afternoon, five in the afternoon, till eight the next morning. He was off two nights a week. He answered all calls, and during the day, the clerk and the tax collector would answer calls and blow the whistle. And they had codes in town, zone two, zone three, zone four, and so forth and so on. And there were certain wheels he put on to do that. Well, needless to say, I spent a lot of time with him in Burr Hall. And he had the distinct duty of making sure the apparatus were in good shape. So anything was broke down, he'd call in the engineer, mechanic, to fix up the apparatus. We had Seagrave at that time, one of the finest there is, anyway. And he would call in. Little John Havasta was his name, from Passaic. He'd come up with a 37 Chevy, with a four-door Chevy, had all the parts and tools in the back of the car. Needless to say, little Charlie would ask questions. He would get there and watch after school. I had to get down there because I knew Mr. Havasta was going to be there. And I'd ask questions, and I got answers. So this kind of got me going. I went to fire school. I joined the department in February 1956. I was 2 years before that, I was an auxiliary member. At that time, he had auxiliary members because I wasn't 21 years old yet. Anyway, I turned 21. It was kind of a fix, I guess. My father resigned, and they took me in his place. And so anyway, I started to go to fire school because my brother Fletch, who spent 60 years, by the way, in the department and rescue squad here in town, he was interested in training and so forth and so on. So I was going to fire school. Went 13 years under my mentor, Bob Cease. And I don't know, Bob saw something in me, and he got me in as an instructor. And I worked in as an instructor around Warren County, Huntington County, Northampton County. And it was very interesting, and I don't know, he saw something in me that I didn't. And if Julie Meeker or Ruth Waller or the Stone Sisters up at Washington High School, my teachers, would have ever told me I was going to be a teacher, I'd say, no, I don't think so. Anyway, I instructed, and I taught firefighter 1, 2, 3, and officer 1, 2, 3, and pup classes and all kinds of stuff. And working down in Hunter County, a good friend of one of my head cheerleaders is sitting in the back of the room there, Jack Lindsay. Jack was the fire marshal down there, and Jack just turned 99. He's still a member of Lambertville Columbia Number 4.
Wow.
Jack, good to see you. Anyway, as an instructor and all those kind of things, I was become chief in 1980 and 1981. May 29, 1980, there was a fire down 67 East Washington Avenue, and I lost Brian Heiner. He was killed in the line of duty. As chief, this was my responsibility, and I took that responsibility. I had many, many of my students say, if I had quit and walked away, they would have quit and walked away also. And I said, no way. I would not do that. I told Brian when I put him to rest up on Montana Mountain, I said, you will not go in vain. And I used that experience through my teaching over the years, teaching firefighters what to look for, what's happening in those atmospheres, and how to protect themselves. So I'm sure that Brian did not go in vain. Anyway, that's one of the things that I really wanted to make sure that people understand. We're volunteers, but as I said, his loss was my responsibility because I was chief. And any chief of any department, it's their responsibility to take care of these things. And I think one of the highlights, and then I'll finish here, one of the highlights of my career was teaching, and I went to a class that was put on by the MFRI, which is Maryland Fire and Rescue Institute, University of Maryland, and it was called Water Shuttle. And I took on Water Shuttle, brought the idea back to Warren County, Huntington County, Northampton County, and I had guys say, that's not going to work, you're crazy. Well, I see it today. We have tanker task force, we have tankers run hauling water. By the way, Water Shuttle means moving the water from one place to the other while we do this with tankers. And when I hear this, I think to myself, oh, what we started out with was practically nothing. But one of the things that really put the icing on the cake, when we lost the hardware store, when we lost the hotel, there wasn't enough water in the tank up on the mountain to supply the hydrant system, but we had already established those folding tanks, and that water shower was working on both ends of the avenue. So it just told me, I said, oh boy, this is great. This is great that this is working and working this way. Anyway, I don't want to belabor this any further. I'm going to close and say thank you. Thank you very much. I do appreciate this. It's been great. And if I had it to do over again, I sure would. Thank you very much.
Next up, our Chief Financial Officer, Ms. Turchin, has asked to come before us, so I will turn the floor over to you.
The reason I'm here, I guess, is last budget, the council meeting, which gave you all the presentation on, I guess, overview of 2011 budget, and he used the numbers I have provided to him. And while the numbers in the budget didn't change, everything's still the same as you received in your packages last council meeting. I have misspoken as to the amount of the total tax increase. I overlooked the number and didn't see the extra zero. And instead of it 1 cent, the increase is actually 8 cents, which is still, if you look at your budget in 2009, 10, going to 11, it's substantial reduction and, you know, shows the progress that the borough made, because not the 8 cents increase also encompasses $400,000 that we received in transitional aid last year that are not in this year budget. So not only we made up the $400,000, but our increases is much less than what we've seen in 2009 and 2010 budget. But the way the budget looks right now, we have 8 cents increase. The only variable in this budget is we're still waiting for the Washington Township to tell us what the health insurance number is going to be from 2010 to 2011. And that's the only variable in this budget. The rest of the numbers are pretty much what they are. So if you have any questions, I'll gladly answer them. If not,
you do have an approximation of the health insurance number in the budget.
Yes, we used the same number as last year.
Okay. Anyone else have any questions? Thank you. Next up, we have Schneider and Company here, a forensic auditing firm. We'd like to give a presentation.
Thank you.
Good evening.
Good evening. Mayor McDonald, council members, borough manager, thank you for inviting me. I have to say, I am humbled to follow a true public servant like Mr. Wright. Somebody whose life is putting his life on the line every day, that just shakes me in awe. I'm a professional. I push papers. You guys put your life on the line, and my hat is off to you and Mr. Wright for a career, a lifetime of service to the public and the town. I know and should be proud of him. But as a forensic accountant, not every accountant is a forensic accountant. You need a lot of experience, a lot of training. I got that in a few places, and I'd like to share some of that with the borough. Let you know what I've done similarly for the township of Vernon, New Jersey, who asked me to do a similar engagement, which we did approximately two years ago. But a touch of background as to how I and my firm got to be where we are. I'm a CPA. I'm a certified fraud examiner. I've been certified in financial forensics by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants. I got that good base from getting my master's in accounting from the Wharton School of the University of Pennsylvania. I then proceeded for 11 years in public accounting with substantial firms. Then something very interesting happened in my career 11 years in. One of my clients introduced me to Donald Trump. Donald Trump was at that time beginning to amass his empire in Atlantic City, and he needed another financial guy on a team in New York. And I was it. And for 6 years, I learned the forensic accounting business with him, because he was suing somebody or somebody was suing him. So behind the scenes, there was constant investigation, constant litigation. And from then, I really started to pick up what it took to investigate a case. After 6 years with the Trump Organization, I decided I missed public accounting and wanted to start my own firm again. So I did that with a specialization in forensic accounting, because that really piqued my interest. 2 years ago, the Township of Vernon was looking at forensic accounting. They had a particular issue that they wanted investigated. They spent approximately $12 to $13 million on one particular project, building a new Main Street, a new town center with the associated sewage system. They were not happy where the money went, and they wanted to know what was right and what was wrong, if anything, about that project. They engaged us. Our approach, which I would tend to think would be similar in this type of approach, is that was a 10-year project. And so we had a span of 10 years. And the first thing we did is we isolated about 1,900 transactions that pertained to that project, which we thought could be pertinent. And rather than look at 1,900 individual checks, I thought a more efficient way. We looked at the six largest vendors. And the six largest vendors did 90% of the work. We covered those dollars and reconciled those dollars 100%. The next seven vendors were mediocre, you know, terms of dollars. We did a substantial amount to verify those expenditures. And last but not least, just in case we overlooked anything which wasn't covered by any of those vendors, we looked at significant transactions, I think anything over $10,000 from all the other. And what do we find from Vernon? Actually, the results were interesting. They published, my report was private for me to the council until they, on their own, decided to publish it. It probably appears on Vernon's website as we speak. But what do we find? We found that the township actually spent $1 million more on the project than they had initially calculated. We found that there was land purchased with unexplained circumstances. We found that there was a payment of $500,000 for one of these pieces of land that was basically hidden from the town council. We found out in one case, the purchase price exceeded the highest appraisals. The town actually paid more than the highest appraisals in a couple of cases. We found out that they purchased out parcels which were not part of the project. We found out they purchased the building, okay, for the project, which they never used, and still remains vacant. We saw they did not have adequate cost controls over the purchasing projects. And we saw they bypassed the mandate to have three independent signatures on key expenditures. We presented our findings to the town council. We prepared a formal report. My formal report was 91 pages with 21 exhibits. That report was passed on to three sources: to the Sussex County prosecutor, to the Attorney General of the State of New Jersey, and to the New Jersey State Police. Subsequently, the Political Corruption Unit and the New Jersey State Police came to talk to me, and I gave them some insight. They then did their own investigation and recommended a certain grand jury proceeding, which I have not followed once it went to the grand jury proceeding. So that's our experience. We've been there, we've done that, we've achieved results for Vernon. And how you would tend to approach it, as I call it, for the borough of Washington, is on a phase one, phase two, phase three sort of system. And in phase one, we would perform initial investigative procedures on a diverse and comprehensive selection of expenditures, vouchers, purchase orders, journal entries, revenue transactions, and credit entries. From that initial investigation, I would expect to come up with, I would call, a list of items at issue. Things which maybe we would see some smoke, and if we got into it, if it was worth getting into it, we could find some fire. We would present those items at issue to the mayor and the town council, and you would then decide at that point what is worth pursuing and what is not worth pursuing based on your goals at that time. So that gives us the advantage of doing on phase one, which I would call a preliminary investigation, then coming up with a bunch of issues or items at issue, select the ones that are most important, or the most important to you, and then we will pursue those. Phase three is us preparing as expert witnesses in any litigation or arbitration procedures. So I offer you that is our approach to forensic accounting. We find that to be the basically most cost-efficient way for any client, to get the most value for their money, basically give them a little control over the process as we go along. And in the future, as soon as you publish open up the RFP, once again, we bid the first time. If that comes up, we are ready, willing, and able to answer that RFP, hopefully with a competitive bid.
Have you done other forensic audits other than for Vernon?
Oh yes, no, we've done many.
You're just using that as the one latest example.
That's the one we've done for a government entity.
Okay.
We do many, many commercial investigations, whether they're partnership breakups, real estate disputes, bankruptcy disputes.
Private industry.
Yes.
Type of ones, I see.
Yes.
And you mentioned the one for Vernon. It was a 10-year project. I thought that we could only go back 6 years on a forensic audit. Could you
explain
that a little bit?
They wanted to trace, because this project began 10 years ago. And they gave me the go ahead, the mandate, and the cooperation, because they wanted to follow the dollars spent on that entire project, and it was started in 1999, if I remember right, and they located the records for us, and we isolated the ones that we felt were pertinent.
Okay. Do other members of council have some questions?
I was just wondering, do you know they were able to recoup any of the money that was improperly spent?
I do not know the answer to that. After I went to the grand jury, it was out of my jurisdiction, and I do not know the answer to that.
Hi. I have just a couple questions.
Sure.
About your particular firm. Is it a large firm, small firm? How many people would be working, say, here?
Okay. We have six or seven people, depending on the season. I would anticipate the staffing on this job to be much the same as Vernon, between three and four people in the field at any one time. I make it a practice of making sure my rear end is in the field. I am a hands-on guy. I don't delegate. You get me because you're paying for me, and I'm there.
Okay. Thank you.
Based on the information given to you as of the language of what we're looking for as far as a full forensic audit, what do you anticipate how long or a price tag that it could potentially cost?
It's hard for me to make that judgment. We'd say a full forensic audit.
What were you actually given as far as information come tonight? Like, were you given information for a full forensic audit, or
what were you asked
to present?
I saw you. Well, it was a general, what would I do
as
an approach as a forensic accountant.
Okay.
Let me give you an example of what I guess I learned early on at the Wharton School. And it was in statistics class. And the professor said to us, think of a big pot of soup. And you want to understand, what does that soup taste like? He said, do you have to eat the whole pot to understand if that soup is spicy or has noodles in it or beans? No. You don't have to eat the whole pot. What we do is we will take a target. I call it test and target. Okay, we'll do a test, and when we smell something and we will cover everything initially in our smell. Okay, but we'll take the most likely courses and the most likely events that are likely to be issues. Okay, and the mundane things, whether it's petty cash reimbursements, payroll checks, standard. That's wasting everybody's money, respectfully, to put the same effort into those as you would on key transactions, on complex issues, on disputed projects. So it's test and target, and you don't have to eat the whole book. You don't have to eat the whole book. You don't have to eat the whole bowl of soup to understand what it tastes like.
I have just another question. The bidding process would be one of your, test, areas?
I'm sorry, what was the beginning sentence?
The bidding process?
Oh, sure. I would.
So?
I would look at it as regarding a specific transaction. I would take the process in isolation. I would take a transaction or a contract that you deem to be troublesome, okay, and look at the process around that specific one or more contracts.
Good.
Okay. Mr. Boyle, you have something?
Thank you, Mayor. Mr. Snyder, when you said that, the analogy you used about the whole bowl of soup, wouldn't that be what a forensic audit is, to empty that pot of soup just to make sure everything's in there? Because if you're going to do snippets, then to me that sounds like redundancy of what we've already had being done with our own internal auditor. We had a state comptroller do an audit where they're just taking some sections to see if practices and procedures are in place. Now, I could be wrong, but a forensic audit, wouldn't that be taking that whole pot and emptying it out and going through that whole thing, cleaning it up?
Not necessarily. You don't have to look at 100%, okay, of every transaction to understand how the soup tastes. And believe me, what we will be doing is not snippets. What we did for Vernon on this project was not snippets, but we looked to see how we can most efficiently, earn our fee and use your money, rather than waste it on mundane things which have no chance of giving us knowledge or coming up with anything that could be useful. So a forensic audit, as any audit, think of any financial statement audit. When the big firms audit GM, they don't look at 100% of the transactions, and we can go down the list. So an audit is not 100%, and that may be a public misperception, but it certainly is. I have that professional responsibility for doing the right job, and snippets is not what I do.
It may have been poor choice of words on my part, but I mean, do you think, not comparing Bernie Madoff to the Borough of Washington, but did they just do little things? I mean, they went after that, fine tooth and comb to find out where all those monies went and how they were spent or whatever. I guess the point I'm trying to make is that if we have the forensic audit that we need to have done, we expect it to be completely thorough and not maybe just testing the waters to see if well, we might have something here or we don't. I mean, how can you tell from face value that there isn't anything behind the first couple documents that you go through?
Well, we do this for a living.
Well, I'm not challenging your expertise. I certainly not. I'm the one that doesn't know.
And I, as the partner in charge of the audit, have the, and I take it serious, the responsibility. Once I see a certain lay of the land, okay, making the game plan as to how much we have to dive in to give you the answer that you want, okay?
I don't think we're looking for an answer that we want. We're looking for the truth of the fact of the matter.
Right. But assessing, okay, maybe a poor choice of words on my side.
All right.
Now
we're even.
You got it. But it's my responsibility for doing enough testing.
Okay.
So that I understand and comfortable and can testify to you that I have, you know, a reasonable degree of confidence that we have covered, you know, the major areas, and this is what we found.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
Any other questions? Thank you very much, sir.
Okay. Thank you for having me here.
Thank you.
Well, I have one question before you go. Of course. Do you do individual interviews as part of your office?
Yes, as provided by, as allowed by law. I mean, certainly current employees feel that obligation. I don't have police powers. Okay, I can't pursue anybody who doesn't want to be cooperative, especially if they're no longer employed. But yes, in the case of Vernon, we met extensively with six current employees. We felt that was the right thing to do in that case. But yes, it's much more than documents.
Thank you.
Okay. I have an additional question to that. So if you found somebody had done any malfeasance on an account, they were no longer employed, and you contacted them, if they didn't want to cooperate, there was nothing that would compel them to cooperate?
Nothing. I have no police powers. I have no subpoena powers.
Okay. Once that goes past him to any legal system, they would have the power now.
That's correct.
If so.
Okay.
Did you allow questions from the audience?
I'll allow one.
I just wanted to find out, we are out for bid now, correct?
Correct.
So that is back open again for bidding. And I just wanted to make a statement. When we thought this was coming down last year, the Citizens Group did quite an extensive research on the companies that submitted bids. And for two reasons, again, we'll hear Mr. Schneider spoke eloquently about his history on the forensic audit and familiarity with it, but the fact that he was also the most reasonably priced in terms of the bid that came out, we felt it was financially prudent to go with that particular firm. So the Citizens really endorsed this particular firm as we were going to proceed. Just to let you know.
Thank you. Thank you again for having me.
Thank you. That takes us to our minutes of the regular meeting of February 2nd, 2011.
Move to approve minutes.
Okay, is there any discussion on any of the minutes? Mr. Boyle.
Real quick, Mayor, just page 3, the spelling on Robin Klimko, it's K-L-I-N-K-O, just for reference.
I have a few. Page 1, it's just like a typo on second paragraph under budget. You have that second line. You erased that 2010. That comes to you.
I don't have them in front of me. We just got
okay.
Okay. 2010.
Just read that.
Okay, it says in 2010. It was 2010.
Okay.
Page 3. Where it says Councilwoman Gleba stated the bid year end report is terrific and she hopes that the bid can accomplish all of their goals. Councilman Higgins stated that there's two Councilman Higgins, but it was Councilwoman Gleba that brought it up and I asked that we received the correspondence from the bid and it was confirmed with the manager and the water company.
Okay. and I requested that the bid executive director share it with the board president. I can send you.
That would be better.
Okay. On page six, at the top, it says any suggestions should be forwarded to the manager by April 6th. It should be Tuesday, February 8th. And then I know the minutes are just summaries, but under the council, my council remarks, if you could just, in this particular case, where it says, how about I just send it to you? I'll just send it to you. I just wanted more of some of the names that I did mention included.
Well, if we're going to approve them with the corrections, you should at least put them on the record here.
Okay. This is what it should be.
Okay.
There was a few things. Council, I'm going to read the whole thing. Council also thanks everyone for their work on the budget. She asked for the information regarding the Comcast charges so that we can use the $25,000 to pay for charges in the future. I also requested a resolution for this meeting, and it's going to be in my council remarks tonight because it wasn't in this meeting. Okay, so there's that. And then she stated she attended the VFW Voices of Democracy dinner. It wasn't a dinner, it was a ward. And would encourage the borough schools to participate. And I really particularly wanted to thank the Post in Washington Borough for everything that they do and all that the VFW does for the entire community. And good luck to Warren Hill Steelers and Junior Street. And I thank the local businesses and organizations. I just wanted it set, written that I really did thank the businesses and organizations.
Put it in email.
Yeah.
I will, but he won't. Yeah.
Yeah. This way, it's on the record, so we. All
I mean,
know
I know
how
it's not
approving.
Supposed to be. I know it's just a summary, but in this particular case, I did want the names mentioned.
Okay.
Thank you.
Any other comments?
Yeah. Page seven.
Seven.
Under vouchers.
Okay.
In the amount of a dollar sign.
No dollar amount.
Says it's on page
two.
No. No, I don't think it is. I can ask any question. That's it. Beat me to it.
Need to look it up. All right. Anything else? Roll call, please. I'm sorry. I mean, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? And the executive session minutes of February 2nd.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, any discussion on that? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Abstentions. Well, that brings us to our correspondence.
Resolution receiving flowers.
Second.
Okay, any discussion on any of our correspondence?
Madam Mayor, you want to go first? Go ahead.
All right, mine's just, again, because I'm still learning so much. Can we make donations? I didn't know the town could make donations.
Yeah, I had a question about that, too.
Can, but practice in the past has been that we have not. We don't feel that that's a wise expenditure of taxpayer money.
Okay, yeah, well, I wasn't sure how that happened.
Yeah, but we can make donations to various charitable organizations if we so choose.
Oh, okay, yeah, but that was... I mean, we don't have the money, but if you feel, you wish you could. But.
Yeah. Anything else?
No, I just wanted to know that.
Councilman?
Thank you, Mayor. Actually, I want to speak to the shared service agreement letter received, written by Joseph Rossi.
Just before you go there, understand that some of that may be contract negotiations, so keep that in mind in your statements.
Okay. I'm going to ask Dick Cushing. I don't know. Do you have that letter in front of you, by chance?
He doesn't have to.
Yep.
First paragraph, second sentence. To paraphrase, that statement there, is that not having the door closed after the horse left, so to speak?
I was wondering the same thing.
Okay. Is that general enough?
Pat, I'm not sure I understand exactly what your question is.
I don't know how to ask a question now because of what the mayor had just said. So I can try to...
Well, we're going to have an executive
session.
We're going
to have it, so we can bring this
talk
up.
Talk about an executive session.
So sorry.
It's part of contract negotiations. So, and I'll take a look at this, Pat, in
thank
the meantime
you.
To see if I can...
I have something, Mr. Mayor. On the for the project graduation, is there any way that we could put that on our website, that they're looking for donations?
You can. The problem is you have to apply the same rules to every organization. If you choose to open up your website and allow one organization, you cannot discriminate among organizations based on beliefs that they have. So that if you do it for this one, and you know, some group comes along that's a charitable group that you may not necessarily feel is the type of group that you'd like on your website, you may be presented with some kind of First Amendment claim that says, hey, you allowed Project Graduation to do it, but you're not going to allow the pro-AFGAN so-and-so group to do something.
Thank you, Mr. Cushing.
You're welcome.
Do we typically, like, respond back to them, like, some kind of...
Yeah, last year. Well, it depends on, obviously, what council's charging. Last year, we sent a follow-up letter.
Yes, please.
Anything else?
I just wanted to comment. I think it would set a bad precedent as well for other groups, kind of what Mr. Cushing said, but for different reasons.
Okay.
You know, if we donate to one person, we'd have to donate to quite a few nice charitable organizations.
Right. Okay. Anything else on our correspondence? Hearing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Okay, at this point, I'd like to open up the audience portion for remarks, petitions, statements, and testimony from guests. Come on up to the microphone, name and address for the record, please.
Hi. My name is Kathy Moore. I live at 220 West Washington Avenue in Washington Borough.
What can we do for you, Ms. Moore?
I'm looking to throw a birthday party for my son and bring in...
Just turn the microphone more towards...
And bring in a truck... But I live, the back of my house is an alley, and it's Church Street Extension. So we're looking to close down the alley, our portion of it, for 3 hours on March 5th, and we'd like permission to do that.
Okay. There would have to be emergency access.
There
available.
Is. There's still, you can still get through the alley.
Okay.
We're at the front of the alley. So it's really just our property on the one corner. And the one across our street, which is their driveway.
Okay.
And then the rest of the alley, you still have access to get in and out of because it's the funeral parlor, the memorial home.
Okay, right behind there.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, what is our normal procedure for that?
We can have schedule the...
DPW. Put
the
horses
up.
Do we require that request in writing, though?
I don't know if you have to have it in writing, but you should act on it.
I called the office of the clerk yesterday, and because I called so late, it wasn't able to get a correspondence in.
There should be a little regulation regarding street closing that tells you who...
It's not that cool.
For the graduation party. Well, I'll tell you what, why don't you put her on hold for a couple minutes? You can move ahead and I'll take
a look at it.
We'll just double check the technical report.
All right, thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Anyone else? Mrs. Sloan.
Susan Sloan, 89 Grand Avenue. This afternoon, I came by and I went out past... on the road between the Borough Hall and the Squad Building. There is a pile of crap, computers, tables, rec chairs, and everything, and it looks like it's been there weeks. And I think it's terribly unsightly and uncalled for. I don't know who's responsible, but it's bad.
There's a gentleman here who's raised his hand. I think he can shed some light on that.
Yeah, we're doing some overall renovation to the hall upstairs, and that's sited for the dump, but we got a coordinated pickup truck and the right time to do it, but it should be gone.
If it were a fireman, I wouldn't say anything.
I have to.
The fireman himself, and
okay, now you'll have to take Joe out into the hall. Give it to him.
Anyone else? Mr. Cushing, do we have an answer?
I'm still looking for time.
If I recall last time, the resident, when this applied, they provided us the specifics. Council made a motion and it was approved. Then, of course, we notified the emergency services, police, fire, EMS, to make sure they didn't have any issues, and then DPW delivered a barricade.
Yeah, I'm not finding anything there specifically.
That
would be the normal practice, would be simply a resolution by the mayor and council, or a motion, authorizing it, subject to the road superintendent looking over and make sure the police have no issues.
Okay.
Or, you know, whatever the normal practice would be.
All right, and what was the date of that, Ms. Moore?
March 5th.
March 5th, and what were the hours you wanted to close?
4:30 to 7:30.
It's PM.
PM.
Good. And most of the neighbors, okay?
Yeah, it had to be public, remember, it had to be, you still kind of have to open it to the public.
Yeah.
Yeah, most of the neighbors' children are attending the park.
Park move.
Okay, is there anyone else for the audience portion? Hearing none, I'll first accept the motion to close the audience portion.
Before we do, I just have a statement. Again, going back to the Cooley party and this one, I was at the Cooley party, and there was an issue with the police at that party, too. The police claimed they were never notified of that party. And there was a big issue made around blocking off the party. I think they actually had to call you, didn't they?
They did, but they were notifying. So the information had to get down the chain.
So it was on their end that they didn't get the information out. Okay. Yeah, because that was a mess. I mean, it was just like unbelievable. I was glad I was there when it happened.
For this one, we'll make sure we notify not only the police department, the Warren County 911.
Communications.
So that everybody's aware.
Yeah, it was the individual police officers that also did everything about it.
Okay. So I'll take the motion to close the audience portion.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? I would accept the motion to allow the street closing on 3-5.
So moved, Mayor.
Okay, from 4:30 to 7:30.
Subject to approval by the superintendent permission of police.
Right. Okay, any other discussion on that? Hearing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions?
I would abstain since I work for a funeral home.
Okay.
Just keep it clean.
You have her information, okay? As soon as we get all the approvals, Ms. Moore will let you know.
No, we
have no ordinances today. Takes us over to reports.
Make a motion to accept the report?
Receive and file.
Receive and file?
Okay. Any discussion on any of the reports? Go ahead.
You go.
No.
Let's see. I have a few things here. First of all, the manager's weekly report. What was the award and congratulations?
I'm sorry?
On your weekly report from February 4th.
No. You're talking about from the joint insurance fund. Last year, we took more advantage of the training sessions that they offer. So we had them come in and train staff more often on basic general safety. And as a result, actually, our workers' comp claims significantly dropped, as well as the cost associated with our workers' comp insurance. So in essence, it's congratulating us on the improvements that we made towards worker safety.
Oh, okay. Good.
Congratulations.
On the tax collector, the revenue report, I was just wondering, out of curiosity...
I'm sorry, current fund or sewer fund?
Current fund. The borough clerk, what will all the revenues receive? Typically, you don't get that many.
That was the Comcast, right?
That's the Comcast annual franchise fees.
Ah.
Remember, we spoke about it. It usually comes in the end of January, beginning of February.
Okay. And, I'm writing this down.
But you only see that once a year.
Once a year, okay. And then on the sewer fund, will she keep track, just maybe more towards the end of the year, too, just like a mental note for yourself, like the collection rate? How are we doing, and will we, like we know it's the tax collection rate, I'd like to know what the sewer collection rate is.
Oh, the sewer, okay.
Well, the sewer collection rate isn't categorized the same way as the regular tax collection rate. What I'll do is I'll have them.
You know, are we getting 100% from all the residents kind of thing?
Yep, not a problem.
Thanks. And thanks again for creating the report. That's all I have.
Mr. Boyle?
Thank you, Mayor. On the municipal court monthly financial report, this actually is a question for Dick Cushing. Ordinances require court appearance, correct? Or do all ordinance violations require a court appearance?
No, if it's committed parking, you could come in, as long as it's on the, if it's on the fee schedule. And I think the ordinance violations are on a fee schedule and are permitted.
So that would require...
Depends on what the ordinance is.
Or if there's a sliding fee.
Or snow removal, failure to remove snow and ice from sidewalk.
Right.
Right. That requires court appearance.
I believe, yes.
Right.
Okay.
All right. This is just a question. That is for what reason?
Well, the reason is normally you'd have to come to court for every single ticket. But the assignment judge and the court system create a specific fee schedule, especially for motor vehicle type of offenses. For instance, a speeding offense, if it's within a certain range, you can plead guilty to that by sending in your money and accepting the 2 points or whatever goes along with it, as long as you follow the fee schedule, because there's a set fee for that. What I think the problem is with an ordinance violation is there isn't the court system, Superior Court system, which regulates our municipal court, has not set a standard fee schedule for each particular violation of an ordinance, so that the judge actually has to set what the appropriate fine is. And that's within the discretion of the judge. So that's why I have to show up.
Okay.
All right. I had the same conversation with the code enforcement officer last evening.
Yeah, I mean, it may not be reflective on a report. You know, I was thinking I got whacked in Mahwah for a motor vehicle, and they allowed me to pay through online, so I pay like a $25 convenience fee.
Yep.
So I'm thinking, well, why not? That could not be applied here.
I think you could discuss it with the judge to see if the judge might be, I don't mean you, but I mean me and the manager would discuss it with the judge.
Well, that would have to be, we'd have to set a set fee for it then.
Well, I think the first thing you got to do is find out from the judge whether he would permit that. Okay. In other words, I think if you're open to that and there's a set penalty and so forth, if the penalty is, let's say, $50, and somebody is willing to pay that, and the judge is willing to go along with that, and the assignment judge permits it, which is really the vital question, then it can be done. But I think it has to be. I think it has to be discussed with the municipal judge.
Say like the fee schedule for a fail or remove is $45.
Yeah.
Right. And you go in here and you talk to the prosecutor and he say, hey, no, it's $20. That happens a lot, right? So if you were to eliminate that particular process, the resident, you know, is it inconvenient to go to a court? They're going to pay the full amount for that particular fine.
They say I'm guilty, that's it.
Yep, and I'll pay
no
full amount, so I
don't
have to go, and, you know.
Yeah, I mean, as long as it's okay with the judge, the judge might say, look, we have to have set fine, because normally there's a range. And you have a range because sometimes there's extenuating circumstances. If you're, you know, like the gentleman who was back in court, or was back in the room today, who's 99, and maybe he couldn't get out quite as quickly to shovel his sidewalk as a young person like yourself, right? Then a judge might say, well, okay, you know, we're going to cut him a little slack.
It gives an option, a valid individual wants to.
Right.
You know, if it's reasonable, if it's not, I mean, and I know now all of a sudden now we've got this agreement with the courts, and now you want to throw this into it.
Well, the one problem, if you have one fee, if it's one fine, it's $50
right.
for not shoveling. When the gentleman comes in who's 98 who says, you know, I just couldn't get out there, and the judge feels very sorry for him,
or just broke my
he
leg.
Wouldn't have as much discretion as he would if there's a range in the fine. So it's a little bit of a balance there.
I guess it's still putting the responsibility so that an individual determines what they want to do.
Yeah.
If you have to go, even if you've got a broken leg, I don't know how that works. Mm-hmm. Send in a doctor's note or whatever. I know, I guess. Looking for convenience, and then you can get a full complement of the violation, you know?
We might be able to figure out a way to do it, which is normal fine unless the judge rules that there's, you know, extenuating circumstances, in which case the judge can lower it. You know, we might be able to work out some language, but I think we ought to first clear it with the judge to make sure it's okay with him for something that's off the standard fee schedule. You know, the proscribed one that comes from the court system.
Okay, well, counsel, if you think about that, you know, I don't know if you had before, if you ever had a violation where you had to go to court, things of that nature, it might be worth pursuing before we actually give direction, just to think about it now that maybe the winter time's over going forward. I don't know what really the amount of ordinance violations we have.
There is another way it can be done, which is by affidavit. The court system permits a defendant, in most cases, to actually, not drunk driving or something
sure.
like that, but cases like this, to submit an affidavit saying, look, I'm guilty. Here's some extenuating circumstances. If you want to say that, here's my check, or I'll pay whatever the judge says I owe. So the other option that might be to encourage the court administrator to make it clear that that option is available so that people don't have to come to court. That's an option that exists in most cases.
So it's a practice already being instituted in other municipalities?
It is something that is actually encouraged by the court system, meaning the people who run the municipal
to make
court.
The court more efficient.
Yeah, to make it, why do you have to make people come in?
Yeah.
And it used to be, it had to be like more than 50 miles away.
Okay.
And then they said, well, what's the difference? You know, especially for something like you didn't shovel your sidewalk or your garbage was out too late
sure.
or too early. You know, stuff that's
right.
happened. So, I mean, that might be another way to do it so that the court system maybe put it on its website and then the administrator would alert people that they can do that by affidavit. They just send out the affidavit, the person fills it out, sends it back, and the judge approves it and fine is entered and the people don't even have to show up.
What do you think?
I think it's a great idea.
Yeah. Look into that?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
All right.
I think you do that all the time. Yeah. Not all the time.
Every week when you're in court, right? that, again, judge runs the court.
Oh, I understand.
So we got to, you know, it's up to the judge to make those kind of directions.
Okay.
Yeah, I think with the fee schedule idea, though, that's probably going to be, from the judge's viewpoint, he has to be the same with each municipality.
Sure.
So I think that's he's not going to want to deal with these different, you know, that way.
That's
I think
that's work quicker.
I think the other suggestion is probably, in my opinion, the better way to go with the affidavits. So.
All right.
Happy judge is a good judge.
That will fall on, Richard, that falls through your office and, yep. you know, because Dick Cushing did use the word figures. I don't know if he meant thinking about it or figures.
I rarely think
sure.
figures.
I'm going. Okay,
thank you, Mayor. Mr. Higgins.
Go ahead, Jesse. Okay. I had a question about issue number 365. Just the long and short of it, it was a sinkhole at the intersection of Sunrise Terrace and Robin Street, and basically the water company got back and said, yeah, it was our break in the main, and that it's the borough's responsibility to fix that. I have to argue that, and I want to see if we can contact Jersey American Water. We pay an awful lot of money each year for them to maintain certain things, and I don't want to set a precedence thinking that anytime there's a water main break or damage to a borough street of some sort that we're going to immediately assume we're going to repair that. That's kind of what it looks like to me.
No,
the response.
The water company, that just, we document what the outcome
okay.
was, but New Jersey American Water routinely patches their water main breaks.
Okay.
We don't allow road opening permits during the winter months. They come back in the spring and they do permanent repairs on anything that breaks
okay.
in the winter.
So that means for Tony Beasley, the Sunrise Terrace Road needs to be repaired by the borough, means the contemporary fix until...
When we spoke to him, there was other repairs that he was referring to.
Okay.
Apparently that just wasn't...
Because, I mean, there's problems. I see the north end of Belvedere Avenue here. Where they fixed before, it's still... It's actually sinking now. I mean, things like that. I don't know how that actually works. It's kind of a
when New Jersey American Water goes out for a water main break over the winter months, they patch it.
Okay.
Because you can't do a proper permanent repair in the colder months.
You can't do a hot patch, right?
They always come back in the spring and we maintain the list. And they're in here every week with street opening.
Okay. I'm just concerned. I don't want to set a precedent. I understand it's cold now and cold patches and way to go until you can.
Yeah.
permanently fix it. Sounds good. Thank you.
I have two questions. One deals with Deputy Mayor Boyles, and one deals with Councilwoman Green's and the reports. We got a municipal court report, the monthly financial report. It doesn't say anything about the borough on there. Everything is the township, and if this is for January, the tax collector's current fund revenue report reflects that we got $5,608 for the court.
I think that's because he said it depends upon the day that it's pulled, you know, we've asked this question in the past.
Okay, this report.
Which two reports? I'm sorry, just so I have
them. The Borough of Washington Municipal Court monthly financial.
Got it.
It doesn't say I have the borough on there anywhere. Talking about Washington Township.
No matter how many times we ask them, they still confuse. They consider Washington. But we do receive the money that we're entitled to each month.
Okay,
we get
well,
that on the revenues.
So we're not on that report.
No, we are on it. It's ours. If you look at the heading, Borough of Washington, she mistyped it, and I've asked her about that in the past.
Okay.
What she does, she uses a standard template and enters the information.
So, the Township of Washington, Title 39?
Township of Washington, okay.
The check that was written to them for Title 39, that we're supposed to get that?
Yes.
We did get it.
We did. Again, the issue on this report is that they listed township, not borough.
Was the check made out to Washington Borough?
No, we received it. When it's received, it's listed on the appropriate report.
Well, that doesn't make sense then, because that would... Are you saying everything on the municipal court report, the $2,480, that all that money is Washington Borough money?
No.
That,
the top goes
no,
to
it,
the
it's
county.
Broken down.
Okay.
The next should be to Washington Borough, but the reason why I bring that up is that number does not match the tax collector's current fund report.
I will call Geraldine and remind her that she needs to make sure that the reports are properly worded.
Okay, but what about
Again, that was from January. Hers are from January.
They're both January. There's a $2,000 difference there.
Yeah, if council wants to not accept this one report, so I can contact them tomorrow for clarification on it, that's fine. If you're unclear,
if you would,
that's fine.
All right, that's that. And then going back to the sewer fund report, tax collector sewer fund report that the Councilwoman Gleason was talking about, I just have a real quick question there. On the 2010 sewer receipts, that $45,000, that was collected in January?
Yes.
So was that delinquent?
There's delinquent costs in that. Yeah. When we keep track of how much we receive, it's total receipts, including the delinquencies. That's the way they listed it on this. This one's a little bit different than the collector's, the current fund revenue report. The current fund lists the delinquencies. Here it doesn't.
You said the same thing.
Okay. But remember, we bill quarterly.
Right. Okay.
Hey, anything else?
Yeah, Mayor, I forgot one other item. Excuse me. On the issues report, issue 366, about removing snow and ice from borough-owned sidewalks, does this also include sidewalks that run in front of, perpendicular, abutted, or however you want to word it, like for retention ponds? Is that borough-owned sidewalks?
That I'd have to check the tax map, because some of them are public, some of them are private, so I'd have to look specifically at the retention basin you're referring to.
Okay.
Some of them we own, some of them we don't.
Okay.
Keep in mind, we may have a retention basin on private property.
The one I'm speaking to, which is on Lambert Street, the older section, the original section,
mm-hmm.
That across from the school.
Right.
You know, that section of sidewalk has not been shoveled out, so.
Off the top of my head, I don't know, but I can check.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Anything else? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Okay, Recreation Commission draft ordinance.
For clarification purposes, that was minus the municipal court report, correct?
Okay.
That's what the intent was.
Yeah, okay. So everybody's aware.
We'll have the January report for next month.
Okay, the Recreation Commission ordinance discussion. Mrs. Lieber, I guess you were doing something with that?
He included some of the things that I wanted. I have nothing to say.
So what do we need here? Rich, we just need to...
I need to know...
Is this approval for the suggested changes?
Yes. What I don't want to do is have to make changes.
Do it seven times.
If there's no other change than what's listed here that council wants to see on a final draft, I'll make these changes and present you the final draft. I just don't want to have to go back 50 times.
Well, the suggestions that I had, some of them are just a suggestive question, like on letter H about attending meetings of the Recreation Commissioners. Do we need language defined of how many public meetings are required? Is it still the same schedule as we have now? Or is that up to the commissioners themselves? Okay. So that wouldn't have to be put in there as it's determined by the commissioners. And also at 3-55.4, powers and duties, number one, about the borough's responsibility to maintain. Do we need to be specific, and I'm asking this generally to the council, that we all include about the pool grounds, buildings associated with the pool grounds, restrooms, pump houses, that such, so we don't misinterpret about what is a park? Is it the pool park? Things of that nature?
No, I don't know. I think it's a good idea. That suggestion.
Did you?
Said,
yeah, okay.
Yeah, sure. I agree. I think it should be very specific.
Okay.
Thank you. Right. I don't have
the
original one in front of me either. I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And none of us.
The original commissioner ordinance?
No, yeah. The one that I guess that he gave us the last meeting.
Do you need it? I got it.
Well, the only, I don't know if it's on there or not, but I think that the first bylaws of the commission should be probably approved by council, and then after that, they're on their own. I mean, generally, that's the way it's normally done as far as I have learned. So, you know, maybe we could add that in if it's not in there, that, you know, we would set their bylaws first for them, you know, to start them off, and then after that, they can amend as they go along.
Would the Recreation Commission have bylaws?
Normally, I mean, you could, but normally they would be regulated by the ordinance. Now, they could adopt bylaws,
well,
but normally, like, say, the Planning Board or the Board of Adjustment, I mean, some boards actually do adopt bylaws for day-to-day operating type of rules, but that's more the exception than the rule, Bob.
I just thought it might be, especially when we want to get a little more specific, maybe it's kind of a good idea. And in this way, we'll also know with the bylaws more or less what's going on when they do update it. I think it's probably to our advantage.
Mm-hmm.
So would there have to be something in the ordinance referencing the bylaws then?
Well, yeah.
Do you want to give the commission the authority to create the bylaws, or the bylaws that the commission must follow? Created by council. That's what that needs to be determined, and that's what will go in.
Rob's suggestion was that council create the bylaws.
The council should probably create them the first time,
and then let them.
And then after that, they're on
necessary.
Their own. Any amendments that they want to make to it, they of course they're.
Bob, what would you put in the bylaws that isn't in the ordinance?
Well, I don't have the ordinance right here in front of me.
Yeah.
Quick, otherwise I'd be happy
to
go
if
you want.
I'm trying to figure out because we could either if there's. Depending on what you want included, we could possibly put it in the ordinance.
Well,
in lieu of creating bylaws. And I'm not saying not to do it, but I'm not sure exactly what we would put in there not put in the ordinance.
One sec, Dick. The thing that I was thinking, too, was it's kind of important that they have something that's more of a guideline for them rather than just the ordinance and constantly, you know, generally ordinances are vague, okay? Bylaws are a little bit more specific as to meeting times, members, how to change the members. Some, maybe they want to have a chairperson that is a tenured longer than someone else or, you know, different things come up. So if they have this document to go by, I think that that's kind of important for, you know, oversight as well, to, from council viewpoint.
Yeah, I'm just kind of thinking, too, that maybe it would be a good idea that if, let's do the ordinance first, and then if we want to go into bylaws, we'll work with whoever is on the commission at that point to create something if it's deemed necessary.
No, I don't agree with that at all.
Well, I think Bob's thinking
you should decide now.
He wants to get some direction. Well, maybe it would be helpful, Bob, if you could kind of draft up kind of what you thought in terms, because I'm not sure what else I'd put in there, because I don't know what you
have
in your mind.
The only thing I could do is, you know, show various samples. Maybe next time I could bring, say, four different other towns, recreation commissions, bylaws, that they have bylaws.
That's a great idea.
So this way, everybody will see what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And then, fine. Okay? I can do that next time. Next meeting.
Okay.
Right.
Well, the attorney's probably not going to be present at the next meeting. Is that going to be a good or bad thing to do? Maybe we should wait till the meeting after that.
I can get it to him.
Okay, if you can get him a copy of that so he can look at it.
Fine.
I mean,
we could email him.
As soon as I get him from Councilman Torres, I'll pass him on.
It works.
If we get in time, we'll...
Mayor, on the same subject, just for a house...